If I were to ask you this morning, are you rich? Most people in the room would probably say no. When we think about that, we rarely consider ourselves to be in that upper income bracket. But now, if we think about this honestly, and if we compare it beyond just the realm of the United States into the whole world, I think all of us would understand that we are extremely well off. That as we look at our lives, as we look at the standard of living that we have, we are rich. Is that a sin? Well, I have said in some classes at times that it almost made it sound like it was. That if you had wealth, if you had money, that you were somehow wrong, that somehow there was a problem there. That's just simply not correct. God does not condemn anywhere in the Scriptures for us to have a good lifestyle. However, He does say that if we find ourselves wealthy in this world's goods, we had better be careful. Because while it is not wrong to have the goods in this world, to have a good lifestyle, it is wrong when we allow that to start wreaking havoc on our spiritual life. In fact, in the reading that we just looked at, that is exactly what Paul is saying. Now, if you notice in this passage, he did not say, for those of you who are rich in this world, give everything up, become destitute, go live in a cave somewhere. But he said, be smart. Understand that these things can very well cause you to lose your soul. This morning, I want us to think about some of these things. As we consider ourselves and the comfortable lifestyles that we live, the warnings that God gives us. In fact, as we think about the economics lessons in the Bible, I want us to understand that God is saying very clearly to you and to me that when you think about everything you have, you better take into account the temptations into which you can fall. So this morning, I want us to consider these ideas. Now, in light of what Paul says and some other places that we're going to look at this morning, one of the things that I think God comes across very clearly in telling us is that we need to understand that money makes us absolutely no better than anyone else. When we think about our standard of living, it does not make us a better person than someone who does not have as much. It doesn't make me a better person than someone who may live in a third world country and really struggle to survive. In fact, as you and I look through the Scripture, it is amazing to me how many times God warns about haughtiness. As God talks about pride and arrogance and haughtiness and what other synonyms He uses, He warns from Genesis on through the book of Revelation that we had better be very careful that we don't start thinking too highly of ourselves. In fact, if you'll back up with me to the Old Testament, to the book of Isaiah, I believe we see Isaiah telling this message to the people of his day in quite clear terms. Chapter 2, we're going to look at two separate verses here. First of all, in verse 11. Isaiah chapter 2, looking to verse 11. He says, the lofty looks of man shall be humbled. The haughtiness of men shall be bowed down. And the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. Now continue on down to verse 17. The loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be brought low. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. Now, as we consider the problems that Israel had, at times they trusted in their wealth, and at times they trusted in their idols, and at times they trusted in themselves, God said, you better put all that away. In fact, we find that the prophet Ezekiel is going to tell a message very similar. By the time we get to Ezekiel's day, we see the fruition of all of this haughtiness that the people had gone through. We see what it had brought them. We see the dangers and the consequences that it had brought to them. And by the time we get to Ezekiel's day, here is Ezekiel. The people are being carried off into captivity, some already there. What does he say to them? As we think about Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 50, he says, just kind of looking back on these people, and they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw fit. God says to the people of Israel, you've got to clear up. You've got to allow yourselves to come to the understanding that I am the one in charge, that I am the one in control. And that if you are allowing your own goals, if you're allowing your own lifestyle, your own wealth to lead you away from me, you had better put that far from you. And I suppose as we think about Proverbs 16:18, maybe that clears it up as well as anything. The familiar verse that says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. When we think about the message of Isaiah, when we think about the message of Ezekiel, when we think about the message of King Solomon, all of them are telling us in very clear terms, understand that nothing in this world makes you better than anybody else. Now, as we bring that point into the topic this morning, why does the idea of wealth, why does the ownership of certain possessions bring us to the temptation of haughtiness? Why is it when you and I own things, or we have things, or we're making a good income, how is it that that leads us into this danger, into this temptation of thinking of ourselves much too highly? Well, we have to consider how mankind views wealth. When we think about, especially our day and age, it is centered around ownership. The other evening, I was watching TV, and you know, you have those moments when you realize just really how dumb you are. And I forget the program that I was watching, and you know, now there's about, 20 minutes of commercials per episode, something like that. And two or three of these had rolled by, and I thought to myself, man, they're trying to sell a lot of stuff tonight. And then I thought, well, that's what a commercial's all about, isn't it? And I began thinking about that. How many times do we sit down and over and over and over, the TV's telling us, you need to own this. You need to have this in your possession. You need to have this. And before too long, we get in that mindset of our day and age that the more we own, the better we are. Because in man's standard, and I would say especially in American standards, wealth will buy us things that place us a notch higher in human terms. That if we are the owner of certain things, or we are the owner of certain brands of things, somehow that elevates us in our significance. And we know that, don't we? Why is it that Beverly Hills is a town that everybody knows? It's because that is a symbol of wealth. There is the achievement. Why is it when you drive certain brands of cars, everyone says you have achieved the best you can get? Because in man's standards, that's how we judge one another. And we have to understand that that's going to lead some to feel that they are better than others. Because they own these things that man acknowledges as better, we begin thinking, well, maybe we are a step above. Maybe we are a little bit better. And if we start feeling this way, we need to come to grips that we are not right with God. If somehow I start thinking that the brand of car, the size of house, the amount in my bank account sets me a notch higher than anybody else, I am completely contrary to everything God says is right and just and truly equal. The book of Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 13. Solomon says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogance, and the evil way I hate. There's our red flag. If God says, I hate, pay attention. And if God says, I hate arrogance, I hate haughtiness, and I'm allowing the things that I own to make me feel better than someone else, I better get rid of them. When you and I consider this as Christians, I think we need to understand that haughtiness can very much ruin our ability to bring others to the Lord. If you and I have allowed this mindset of modern man to get in our hearts, If we've allowed ourselves to think that somehow because we are well off in human terms, and we've grown haughty because of that, it's going to jeopardize our ability to let people know what it means to serve God in humility, in humbleness. In fact, as I think about that, I consider, and we won't take time to turn here, I feel like everyone's familiar with this. We think about the standard that's set. I tell you what, let's go there anyway. Luke chapter 18. As we think about this standard, and look at the attitude that we have here in Luke chapter 18. Going down to verse 11, you remember it well, the two men here have come before God. And the tax collector is standing there and he's listening. And the Pharisee is saying his prayer in very loud terms. Just go ahead and look at verse 11 at what he says. He says, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. How many of you would become a follower of the Lord if He was teaching you? How many of us, if we knew nothing about God and we heard this Pharisee standing up making this most obnoxious claim before God, we would be turned off. We would say, I want nothing to do with that because of that standard. Because of himself being the center of his life. But I am much too afraid that we allow that to happen to us with our wealth. We begin saying, well, I live in this neighborhood. I run with this circle of friends. I have this security. And if we are not careful, we are that Pharisee in a sense of physical wealth. We are a Pharisee in the sense that we allow ourselves to feel like we're better than anyone else. I tell you, I have been in a number of congregations and I have met a number of Christians who are quite well off. And I think all Christians need to understand that they must be careful not to flaunt their wealth. I believe I've seen both. There have been people that I have been associated with who are some of the most humble people you can imagine, but yet they are also quite well off. And I have also known Christians who make sure that others know how much they have. We must be very careful not to flaunt our wealth. It's going to turn off those who may be looking to the Lord, who may be trying to find the truth. And I would say as well, it may damage our relationship with other Christians as well. Those Christians who are responsible, who are good stewards of the things that God has given to them, are careful not to create problems with fellow Christians. You remember what Paul writes when he says, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. Would we be doing a disservice if we said, I think Paul would include in that rich and poor, upper class and middle class and lower class? There is none of that when it comes to God. There is none of that when it comes to our relationship with our brethren. No matter how much or how little I have in a bank account, no matter the size of my house or the kind of vehicle I drive, I am no better and no worse than anyone else who is in the family of God. Because Christianity eliminates earthly distinctions which would cause us to be different. We know that Christians have struggled with that for many years. We know the Corinthians face problems with that. Nonetheless, Paul says, you need to understand that there is no dividing line. There is nothing that causes you to be better than anyone else in the family of God. Money makes us no better than anyone else. A second lesson that I believe God teaches us quite clearly is to make sure that we understand that He saves, and it's not that our money that does such. We live in a time of security. We live in a time when we've got retirement plans, and health care, and life insurance, and house insurance, and insurance for the possessions within our house. We have social security. We have a welfare system in the United States. What we have done is tried to blanket ourselves in protection so that nothing bad can get us down. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, unless we allow that to start taking the place of our faith in God. If you and I start to believe that we are insured to the hilt, therefore we are okay, there is nothing that can cause us any problem, God may teach us otherwise. God may show us that yes, there are things in this life that can happen, that you must turn to me to make it through them. We've got to be very careful in our rich society, in a generation that probably has more money at its disposal than any other society that has ever been on the face of this earth. We've got to make sure that we don't allow ourselves to get into this false sense of security. I want you to go back with me to the book of Deuteronomy, because I believe Moses makes the point just about as clearly as possibly can be made. Here in his final addresses to the people of Israel, he's warning them. He's saying, you're about to go into a land that's going to be good. You're going to go into a land that has a great deal of prosperity, and you're not going to have to work too hard for it. Listen to his warning. We're going to pick up in verse 11 and read on down through 17. He says, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments, His judgments, and His statutes, which I command you today, lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold are multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that He might humble you and that He might test you to do you good in the end. Then you say in your heart, my power and my might and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. I tell you what, you take out the reference to Egypt and the wilderness, and if that is not our generation, I don't know what is. We have been brought into a rich and prosperous land. You and I have been given blessings beyond measure. A lifestyle that even 50 years ago no one could dream of. And how many times do we see those in our society talking about what they have done? Talking about what they have accomplished. That's what Israel did. And you and I must be careful that we don't trend in that same direction. Let me tell you, there is no such thing as a self-made man. There is no such thing as a self-made woman. We are what we are. We have what we have in the sense of prosperity by the graciousness of our Lord. And we must never let that come to replace Him. Again, we can trust in our stuff more than God. We can look to these things and the stocks and the bonds and the retirement plans, and we can say, here is our salvation. We've got to be careful. Note with me over in the book of Psalm, chapter 49. I want us to note what's said here beginning in verse 6. Psalm 49, we're going to look down to verse 6. Notice here what David has to say about this. As we go to chapter 49, looking down to verse 6, actually the sons of Korah here speaking this, beginning in verse 6, he says, those who trust in their wealth and boast in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him, for the redemption of their souls is costly. And it shall cease forever. that he should continue to live eternally and not see the pit. Is that not the same idea? We look at what's said here, and point blank we're told, don't trust in your stuff. Don't trust in the things that God's given to you that are really His, over which He's made you a steward. Don't allow those things to lead you astray. You remember the church at Laodicea? Didn't they do that? Didn't God say, your wealth has made you blind, your prosperity has made you lukewarm, where you will not trust in me? I tell you, we have got to be so careful of those kinds of things. We've got to be careful that we don't allow these things to take the place of God. I want to direct our attention once again over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. I'm not going to reread this whole section, but go down with me to verse 17 once again. Verse 17, the first part of the verse makes our point that we made earlier about haughtiness. But now notice the second part of that verse. Nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Whatever we have comes from God. So we could say in a sense that if we have wealth, that is a gift to us from God. But I want us to understand as well that God doesn't always define riches like we do. That as you and I consider the things that God says make us rich, that it'll help us to keep our priorities very straight. Look with me over to Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2. As we look down to verse 9, the people of Smyrna, the Christians who live here, were not rich by man's terms. In fact, it appears that they were quite poor. But notice what God says, verse 9. He says, I know your works, tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Consider what God says. He says, when I look at you, man may say you're poor. By the standards of society, you may have nothing. But in my book, which is the only book that counts, God says, you're quite well off. You're rich. Similar point is made by the Apostle Paul to the church at Ephesus over in Ephesians chapter 1. We look down to verse 18. And again, note what the Lord has to say about riches here. Ephesians chapter 1, looking down to verse 18. He says, the eyes of your understanding being enlightened, that you may know what is the hope of His calling, what are the riches of the glory of His inheritance in the saints. What do you think the world would be like if even Christians put as much time into that inheritance in heaven as they put in trying to get ahead in this life? How much stronger would we be personally, congregationally, maybe even as a society, if we could truly understand what wealth is all about, where our true riches lay? If we look at the people of Smyrna, as we look at the message of Paul, I think we can understand that. God says, don't be haughty. Don't think that your wealth makes you any better than anybody else. He also says, you make sure you remember that I save and that it's not your money. And I would say as well that another lesson he teaches us is this, is put your money to work. Today we have a lot of investment advice, don't we? We have a lot of people who make their careers of doing that, and I'm glad they do, because I benefit from someone else's wisdom in that. But what if we took those same principles and we considered that in our physical wealth being used for spiritual accomplishments? How much better would we find things if we put our money to work, if we invested our money wisely into the service of God? You and I both know that wealth can cause laziness and selfishness. We remember the farmer. We remember the problems that he had because he grew haughty, he grew lazy, he grew self-indulgent because he had a lot. And we look at him and we kind of tick at him and we say, poor guy, when it may be that we need to get the beam out of our own eye in that regard. God says, don't allow this to cause you to become lazy. Don't allow your prosperity to make you to the point where you are doing nothing in the service of God. When we place a check in the collection plate, that's not buying our way to heaven. That's not doing the work that we've got to do. When I write out a check and put it in the collection plate, really, in a lot of ways, that's one of the easiest things I can do. We've got to understand that we cannot buy our way to heaven by somehow paying someone else to do our work for us. When you and I consider what we have been given, when we understand what God expects of us, let's understand that He expects us to be busy, folks. He expects for us to be diligent in doing His work. Look with me, if you will, over to Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews chapter 13, going down to verses 20 and 21, and just listen to what he says here about what he expects. Hebrews chapter 13, looking down to verses 20 and 21. He says, now may the Lord, the God of peace, who brought up our Lord Jesus from the dead, that great shepherd of the sheep, through the blood of the everlasting covenant, make you complete in what? Make you complete in every good work to do His will, working in you, what is well-pleasing in His sight, through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. What does He say? He says God has things He expects of you. God is working through you. You know, it's almost, and it is, when we become Christians, we give God control. God now is running our lives. And so the writer here is saying, you let God work through you. Well, if I have this attitude of saying, well, I'm just going to drop something in the plate, and that's the extent of my work for the Lord. I've done everything I could do. I've become like that farmer. I've kind of laid back and said, look at how much I've achieved. I don't have to do anything else. And God simply will not tolerate that kind of attitude. You and I need to understand this congregationally. As a congregation of the Lord's people, any congregation needs to be generous in the work that's being done in the Lord. Let me put this note of caution there, though. The decisions need to be responsible. I have sat through way too many business meetings where I've heard men speak who in their own affairs would be very cautious and very conservative in their spending. If something is being purchased, say, let's buy the very best. Let's make sure we get the best of the line. It's almost like the caution is thrown out the door. But we can't have that attitude. It's got to be responsible. And when it comes to supporting men to preach the gospel, I've seen both extremes. I've seen those congregations who were just as tight-fisted as they could be. They did not want to provide anybody anything. They wanted bank accounts to grow. That's not right. And I've also seen those who perhaps were a little too free with the money, who sent that money to works that just simply were not productive works. Maybe the man was in the wrong, he's the wrong guy for the job. Maybe the area had, there had been saturation there, but no real response. Again, we need to think responsibly about that. Let's not measure our generosity simply by seeing how big of an account a church can make. When we can look at our account and say, well, we've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in the account. No, I don't think we're being good stewards that way. We've got to be responsible. We've got to be generous, but wise in that. Putting the Lord's money to work where it can best be used. Congregations will be held accountable for that. And as well, when we come as individuals before God, God is going to want an accounting from us of just how generous we have been in helping the needs of others. You know, when we talk about giving, the two passages that typically we turn to are found in the letters to the Corinthians. Have you ever sat down and studied those accounts? In both of those situations, there were needy saints. There were those who had problems, who seemed to have become destitute. And on both occasions, God is saying, I believe speaking to individuals there, when I come, I want a collection to be ready for those saints. Not because I'm forcing you to do it, but because of your own personal generosity. Now, there's two things there I think we need to look at. First of all, there was a diligence to take care of those saints in need. Secondly, there was a diligence to make sure that you were giving what needed to be given for that collection. I'm afraid sometimes we are kind of one-dimensional in our view of Christians, and that one dimension is just who's around us. And we forget about Christians in other parts of the world. You see, you and I as individuals need to diligently be finding those things out. And if there are Christians that we can help, if there are Christians where maybe I could do something personally for them, I do that. I understand there's ramifications and there's responsibilities. But nonetheless, I cannot continually offer excuses to say, well, I'm not helping this person because, I'm not going to help them because, and ultimately try to talk ourselves out of any generosity so that we don't have to let that money leave our account. Now, I believe everything we see in the Bible bespeaks generosity. Giving with a cheerful heart. Giving with an open heart. Because that reflects God. That reflects His generosity. And so here's a brother, here's a sister who's fallen on hard times. I don't start saying, well, if he had just done this, if she had just done that. No. I help that brother. I help that sister wisely, responsibly, but I help them. You and I need to understand that we are stewards. The stuff that we have in this world, Paul said, we didn't bring with us, we're not going to take out with us. God has given it to us to use in His service. How are we doing with that? How are we doing when it comes to congregational responsibilities, individual responsibilities? God expects us to be generous. And so as we think about this, of not allowing ourselves to grow haughty because we have more than someone else, not allowing ourselves to become secure in this world's goods, and also putting that money to work for the Lord, the question is, where are our riches? I can make excuses. I can say, well, yeah, but you don't know about this. I don't want to know. I don't know about the affairs of this congregation. I don't want to know. I don't know about your personal affairs. I don't want to know about it. I want each of us to answer this question. Where are my riches? Am I laying them up for heavenly pursuits? Or are they the things that are going to bring me temporary comfort here? Does God say live in a cave? Does God say ride a bicycle everywhere? Does God say never buy your wife a new dress? He never commands us to be destitute. He never commands us to give up all the things in this life that can bring comfort. Unless they're taking His place. And if they're taking His place, we better get rid of them. Where are your riches? That's the question God will ask each of us when we're called before Him. Thank you for your good attention this morning. I appreciate that so much. And ask you to go ahead and turn to the number that's been announced. Maybe this morning you've realized that you've not been putting your riches in the right place. That everything you're working for is for the here and now. Everything that you're doing is for the present. There's nothing that you've been thinking about for the future. God says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. that's where true security is. That's where true peace is. You and I might have a lot in this life. We might have barely anything. We might never know what it means to struggle. Struggling may be the way of our lives. Doesn't matter. If we trust in God. If we use what we have in His service. If our attitude is right. This morning, if you're ready to be a part of this family, where the best thing about it is that we know that we belong to a generous Father who will bless us in every way. You don't need to delay your decision. Be baptized. Have your sins washed away. Or if you've done that and you've fallen away, come back to Him this morning. Whatever it takes, be rich in eternity. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing together?